stick your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. I'll say this to start the week. It's Monday. It doesn't feel like Monday. I know it doesn't feel like Monday because we're all trying to figure out the difference between Monday and Thursday and Saturday for so many of us at this point. I can't do anything about the pandemic. I can't change the world we're in. But hopefully together we can have a little fun, a little escapism, and we can at least deep dive into the what-ifs, the possibilities, and the how-do-we's. That's the only thing we can do right now for some semblance of normalcy. And that's what we're trying to do today, especially with one piece of big news. The NCAA is going to vote today on whether or not to give the athletes that have been affected by this pandemic, spring sport athletes specifically, an extra year of eligibility. By the way, I should stress, all reports are it's spring sport athletes. It doesn't say just seniors, so it should be everybody affected by this. Will they give them an extra year of eligibility? More importantly, what would you do if you had a vote? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's how you can get in on the Shell Penzo performance line to tell us what you think. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. If you missed the first hour of the show today, go check it out. It's on demand in the First Take Your Take podcast, brought to you by the Capital One Quicksilver Card, earning unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase everywhere. What's in your wallet? Now, if you've been listening to the show the last few days, you know that First Take is doing a fun series, QB Continued. And this is where they're going to break down a different quarterback and the team around them with a little bit of expertise and thoughts of what we're going to see coming. They were joined by one of my favorites. You know that I am a straight out fan child of Dan Orlovsky. Nobody breaks down film better for this entire network than Dan Orlovsky. Dan joined Max and Stephen A. to do QB Continued with one of the more controversial quarterbacks that we all know he loves, Carson Wentz. Check it out.
Yeah, I have a problem with Carson Wentz being number four. Dan, that's outrageous. I love Wentz. Like, I was arguing when Molly was arguing for Tom Brady as MVP a couple years ago. Wentz is clearly the MVP at the moment he got hurt. Then Foles won the Super Bowl. And then the next year, Wentz wasn't so good, and neither were the Eagles. And then Foles took over, and once Wentz got hurt again, and took him to the playoffs and won on the road, and almost won again on the road against teams they were underdogs against. And then, you know, when Carson Wentz finally has his chance to have the team to himself, and yes, guys were dropping passes, and that was the fact of the matter, and yeah, and they did make the playoffs, and I give him credit for that, but he was so far from a top five quarterback last year. I'll remind you, when he started playing well, he would make some miracle throw that only he and a few others could make. He would follow that up usually by a bad throw or two, and he was squeaking by the team's rivals in his division, which is universally considered, if not the worst division in the history of football, among them last year. He was squeaking by those teams when he was playing well. And he was faring worse against them than, because right around that time, if he played Washington, the Giants would play Washington. He played Dallas, Washington would play Dallas. He was faring worse against those teams than the other weak quarterbacks. Either you have a young quarterback or a quarterback that's not so good. We're faring against the same teams he was playing. So I'm with you. Carson Wentz is an upper half quarterback. I'm with you. He has top five talent. I'm with you. He could have been the MVP if he didn't get hurt the year they won the Super Bowl with Foles. But to put him ahead of Aaron Rodgers, even last year, Rodgers, worst of his career, I would say, for a season where he was healthy and the whole thing, and not really excuses other than the coach, I get it, but Rodgers did not play well by his standards. He was clearly better than Wentz. His team did better. They were perceived as better. They won more. And Rodgers was better. And that was in an off year for Rodgers. You want to put Wentz ahead of him? Dan, have you lost your mind?
My turn now, or is Stephen A. going?
No, go ahead, Dan. Go ahead, Dan. This is between you and Max.
Max, first of all, you came on and you said, no, I don't agree. And all you did was recap Carson Wentz's season last year, which is incorrectly viewed by you. Like, you didn't tell me why you don't think he should be four or who you think should be ahead of him other than the last 4 seconds when you said Aaron Rodgers. So I don't need you to recap what last season was incorrectly. 2018, when you talk about when Nick Foles comes in, 2018, before he ended up going going out when Foles came in. He had 21 touchdowns and 7 interceptions, okay? So, like, that was coming off of an ACL. That wasn't just because – that wasn't a healthy season. That was coming off of an ACL that he was still playing solid football. We know what happened last year. We obviously disagree on the viewpoint of that. You want to sit there and say, how can I place him ahead of Aaron Rodgers? And I begged for you and Stephen A. not to do this because I knew what I was going to do in return to that. So let's not look at last year between Carson Wentz and Aaron, who I love. Let's look at the last three seasons. In the last three seasons, Carson Wentz QBR averages 5th. In the last three seasons, Aaron Rodgers 18th. In the last three seasons, when Carson starts and when Aaron starts, they averaged 26 points on offense under Carson Wentz. They averaged 23 points of offense under Aaron Rodgers. In the last three seasons, Carson Wentz is better on third down. He's got a better touchdown percentage, better points per drive. Aaron Rodgers, the only thing that he has done better in the last 3 years than Wentz is not turned the football over. But by every metric, by every way we want to measure their performances over the last 3 years, Carson Wentz has played better than Aaron Rodgers. If you want to talk about 6 games last season, to Molly's point, he won 6 games when receivers had less than 75 yards. Like, that's outrageous. So however you guys want to measure their performances in the last 3 seasons, Carson Wentz has played better than Aaron.
It's ridiculous.
Well, first of all, Dan, it is ridiculous. It is ridiculous, Dan. And here's the reason why. First of all, you say the last 3 seasons. Well, excuse me. Two seasons ago, Dan, you have to remember that Aaron Rodgers got hurt.
Do
they
it.
Were 4-3 with him as the starting quarterback. He didn't play the last 9 games. Then after that, then the following year, of course, we saw what happened with him and McCarthy. And then this past year, when he was 13-3, they had a new coach. Not to mention the fact, do you know that in terms of double-digit interceptions, Aaron Rodgers hasn't thrown double-digit interceptions in the last 9 seasons? Do you know that he hasn't thrown more than 6 interceptions in the last 4?
Yeah,
do you know that he did this 4 interceptions last year? And oh, by the way, you know what? His receiving core wasn't much better than Carson Wentz was working with. You take all of those things into consideration. That if it's, well, it's not an interception list, but what I'm saying to you is you got to look at Aaron Rodgers. You have to look at what he's working against. You have to look at debilitating health. You have to look at the fact that he has a resume that is far more expansive than Carson Wentz. You look at Carson Wentz. Again, we're not questioning his talent. But in terms of his level of productivity, albeit due to injury, Carson Wentz, there's a lot of question marks as to what he can do or what he will do because it hasn't happened yet. We project because we look at his skills and we say, hey, but I've never heard anybody other than you say that Carson Wentz is better than that bad man that is Aaron Rodgers. I've never heard that before. The brother's skilled. He can play.
Carson Wentz doesn't
even better than Aaron Rodgers? Come on now.
Let's first take your take on ESPN News. And look, I love arguing with Dan, but my man watches so much film. It's just hard. It's hard. So now, as we like to do every day, we're going to hop over to the Shell Penzo Performance Line. We're going to take this QB continued one step deeper by being joined now by ESPN Eagles reporter Tim McManus. Tim, Orlovsky says that Carson Wentz is better than Aaron Rodgers. Your thoughts?
I respect the heck out of Dan Orlovsky. I think that he's as good as anybody in the business. But I'm not ready to quite go down that road. Aaron Rodgers is a Hall of Famer, surefire, with one of the best, most accurate arms that I've ever seen, and a beautiful, quick release. And I think that Carson Wentz has a ton of upside, but not ready to put him in that conversation yet.
Okay, so in your mind, the Eagles came into this season with a few different needs they needed to address. Where have they really succeeded the most?
I would say on the defensive side and in the secondary in particular, they really needed to shore up that cornerback position after having one of the leakiest secondaries in the NFL last year. And they did that by not free agency, but trade by getting Darius Slay in here. And he's 29 years old, so he does have a little bit of tread on the tire. But at his best, he's one of the premier cornerbacks in the NFL. And I think it's exactly what defensive coordinator coordinator Jim Schwartz needs in order to maximize what he wants to do on defense. This is someone that can follow the number one receiver. They typically don't do that in Philadelphia, but I think that's they're going to make an exception here. They're going to be able to play more man coverage. It's going to allow him to be more creative with pass rush and bring more than four guys. And so I think that even though they lost Malcolm Jenkins, and that is a very big loss for this team, the fact that they brought Darius Slay in really helps ease some of that cost of losing Jenkins.
We're talking to ESPN Eagles reporter Tim McManus on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. I'm Jason Fitz. Last week, First Take debated whether or not Carson Wentz should be upset that the Eagles didn't try to get DeAndre Hopkins. What's your reaction to DeAndre Hopkins not being with the Eagles?
The fact that they had conversations about DeAndre Hopkins, I thought was interesting, and ultimately General Manager Howie Roseman decided not to pull the trigger. A big part of that is because the package that the Texans were offering the Cardinals was different from what they were offering the Eagles, and also Hopkins wants to tear up the contract that he has, even though he's got 3 years remaining. And wants a new one. And so the Eagles, I don't think, wanted to open that Pandora's box with the rest of their players. And so you can understand the thought process, especially when they recognize that the draft class that's coming up is historic in terms of the quality of wide receivers in it. So you get it. But at the same time, I thought that they were going to safeguard themselves a little bit more heading in because they didn't have a single wide receiver that had 500-plus yards last year. It was part of the Achilles heel of that team in 2019. And now they are gambling in a sense that the people that they're going to pick up in the draft, and I do think they're going to go wide receiver early and often in this draft, is going to make up for some of what they lacked last year. And so they'll keep their eyes open for some other trade possibilities between now and the start of the season. But right now, I think they're a little bit more bare at wide receiver than they should be or want to be.
If they go into the season with no additional weapons other than the draft for wide receiver, at the end of the year, is Carson Wentz a better receiver or better quarterback than Dak Prescott in your eyes?
You know, I kind of start from the premise that Carson Wentz is a better quarterback than Dak Prescott. This is my opinion. You know, I get to see a lot more of Wentz, but I feel like that he is the better QB. Now, does Prescott have more things going for him? You can certainly argue that. They both have quality offensive linemen. Prescott has the advantage when it comes to the wide receivers right now. And so I think that they'll be, in terms of overall production, pretty close if all things stay the way that they are right now. And I think that Wentz would have to lean more on that two tight end set with Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert and hope that DeSean Jackson can return to health and bring what he showed flashes of in that week one against Washington before he went down with the groin injury. And so I think that from a production standpoint, if all things stay even, I think Prescott and Wentz should be pretty much neck and neck.
You can follow him on Twitter at @Tim_McManus. Tim, we appreciate your time. Thanks for hanging out with us.
Of course, anytime. Thanks, guys.
Well, you know that the Dak Wentz pay argument is something that's going to get everybody fired up. This is coming off Dan Graziano's update on Dallas's latest offer to Dak. Now, you just heard Dan Orlovsky talking about Carson Wentz and his appreciation of Carson Wentz's play. That led to a conversation between Dan, Max, and Stephen A. about the fact that Dan believes Carson Wentz should make more than Dak.
Carson Wentz should be getting paid more. There's a couple of reasons why. Number one, one of these players has been a runaway MVP candidate before injury, and that was Carson Wentz. Runaway MVP winner in that 2018 season, 2017 season, and then he gets the injury. He was having the second best sophomore season ever at that point behind Dan Marino, and then the next year Patrick Mahomes did it. Number two, he's led his team to the playoffs the last three seasons. Two years ago, certainly Nick Foles comes in and kind of caps it off, but led his team to the playoffs the last three seasons. And this is what we do know. It's the bottom line between these two players. One guy has proven that he can carry a team when it's depleted with injuries, and one guy has proven that he's more reliant on people. We know what Dak Prescott has struggled with when a guy like Tyron Smith has not played, or when he didn't have Amari Cooper, or Travis Frederick hasn't played. Their performance drops off. Where we saw Carson Wentz last year, when everybody everybody on that team was gone, consistently rise to the occasion to perform at a top level? Because that's what you have to ask yourself when you're going to pay these guys the amount of money you're going to pay them. Is that player good enough to overcome the three or four guys that we won't have on our team anymore because of the amount of money that we have to give them? Carson Wentz proved that yet last year. Yeah, I'm good enough. And Dak Prescott hasn't proven that to this point in his career yet. So to me, it's Carson Wentz deserves more money.
Please, please, that's utterly ridiculous. I can't believe that nonsensical argument you just made. I'll give it to you that Carson Wentz was an MVP candidate when he went 11-2 in his 13 starts a few years ago before getting hurt and Nick Foles led them to the Super Bowl. He had thrown 33 touchdowns, just 7 interceptions that year, even though he was only completing 60% of his passes, Dan. You didn't bring that up, but that's neither here nor there. The next year, you're going to sit up there with a straight face and say he led them to the playoffs? They were 5-6 in the 11 games he started. 5-6. And then Nick Foles came in and led them to the playoffs and ultimately to a playoff win over the Chicago. I know you said they came in, but you said he led them to the playoffs. That was patently false. They were 5-6 in the games he started. He goes down and then Nick Foles came in and saved the day. And then they ultimately beat Chicago in the playoffs before losing to New Orleans. That's number two. Number three, Carson Wentz has one playoff appearance on his resume that we've seen him in that particular game. He completed one of four passes or one of three passes for like 4 yards or something like that because he got hurt that early against Seattle. I know that Carson Wentz is a stud quarterback. I also recognize and appreciate what he was working against last year. Nelson Aguilar missed about 5 games. Alshon Jeffrey missed about 6 games. DeSean Jackson missed about 13 games. I get it. I totally understand it. I'm not trying to knock Carson Wentz's abilities and capabilities in any way. But I also have to lean on your level of production or what is lacking and the reasons why. Obviously, it was because of injury. We get all of that. But they happened. And the fact that they happened and the fact that you weren't there to be available and Dak Prescott didn't have that problem. Plus, Dak Prescott has a better winning record as a starting quarterback in the National Football League. Carson Wentz is about 32-24. I think Dak is about 38-24, whatever it is. Yes, he has Ezekiel Elliott and Amari Cooper. We get all of that. But there's something to be said about him. Him being reliable, him being dependable, him being that leader. And the Dan Orlovsky that I know is a guy that doesn't just focus on your abilities. He also focuses on all of those intangibles. That's why you're so hardcore. Guys make a mistake. You don't want to give second chances. You're ready to ban them from the league and all of this other stuff because you talk about availability and accountability just as much as you talk about ability. And Dak Prescott has been those things for the Dallas Cowboys. He might produce in a different fashion than Carson Wentz does, but in the end, he still produces. His numbers are comparable. Plus, he's more reliable, more dependable, because he's more durable. And I think that alone should make sure he gets paid at least as much as Carson Wentz gets paid. That's where I'm at with it.
So it is left to me to decide. I am the tiebreaker. Dan Orlovsky,
it's just
the most TV-friendly, best breaking down football plays on video, making them accessible to fans, the whole thing since Gruden. I love when you're doing that, and you're the biggest Carson Wentz booster in the world. And yet your argument for him is so weak. You're right, but you make the wrong argument. Stephen A., you're wrong. Dan is right, but his argument's wrong. Dan, he did not lead the Eagles to the playoffs all those times, as Stephen A. pointed out. He had a losing record. Foles took over, played him into the playoffs, won a playoff game, on the road, almost won another one on the road. Wentz hasn't done that. Last year, when Wentz played them into the playoffs, playing better than, a replacement-level guy probably would have played. In fact, he was outplayed versus all those awful NFC East teams by all the other NFC East quarterbacks. If he beat Washington, the Giants would beat them, and their quarterback, every time Daniel Jones, whoever, would look better than Wentz beating some awful team. Wentz had a very overrated season last year. Nevertheless, Stephen A., Dan is right about this. We've seen Wentz hit heights that Dak has never reached. He just hasn't. And last year, Dak was fully loaded. He did not have a coach, and that makes a big deal. The big difference, but fully loaded, missed the playoffs. And Wentz had a depleted team with a much better coach. He made the playoffs. It is actually much closer, Dan, than it should be. This should be runaway Wentz because his ceiling is so much higher. But actually, it's very close. Dak, the fact that he doesn't miss games, the fact that he's been consistent, all those things, and the fact that, by the way, he's put up numbers, has put Dak in a position where he's nipping at Carson Wentz's heels in a way he shouldn't be. Nevertheless, Stephen A., Wentz is ahead of Dak. He's performed at an MVP level in the past, and his team made the playoffs last year.
The never-ending debate between Dak and Wentz. It will be with us for their entire careers. It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're going to keep taking your take. Should players get an extra year of eligibility in the NCAA for spring sports specifically because of the coronavirus? 888-SAPE-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We'll get more of your take. Plus, we've seen some big moves in free agency. What move will have the biggest impact on the playoffs? First Take discusses that, and you'll hear it. That'll be next. But first, with all the uncertainty in the world, feeling safe at home has never been more important. And that's why I want to talk to you about Simply Safe Home Security. They're friends of First Take, Your Take, and for good reason. I put my money where my mouth is. I've moved everything over to Simply Safe. They've made it easy to finally get comprehensive protection for your home. There's no technician or salesperson. Nobody needs to come to your house. Nobody needs to disrupt your house. You don't need to pay any outrageous monthly fees or sign a long 2-year contract. You just order online. You can set it up yourself in under an hour, and your home is protected 24/7 with emergency dispatch for break-ins, fire, and more, all for just 50 cents a day. And I'm telling you, you know I'm not handy. If I can set it up, anybody can set it up. And we're not the only fans of Simply Safe. U.S. News and World Report named Simply Safe best overall home security of 2020. The system is absolutely unbelievable. Right now, when you head to simplysafe.com/fitz, that's simply with an I, safe.com/FITZ. Our listeners get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. That's simplysafe.com/fitz to make sure that they know that I sent you. From Simply Safe and all of us here, wishing you safety and good health right now. Go check it out. Coming up next, big news in free agency. Which one will mean the most to the playoffs? You'll hear First Take next on First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio. First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We're asking you today, the NCAA is voting on whether spring sport athletes should get an extra year of eligibility. The question is, how would you vote? If you were getting a vote with the NCAA, what would your vote be and why? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can also tweet me, at Jason Fitz. We'll get to some of your take in just a second. But first, let's get to some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Free agency period is done, so now we have to look at, or at least let's say the initial impact of it is done, as we've gotten a little farther into the free agent period for teams across the NFL. The question is, now that we have a little bit of runway here and we can look at it, what team, what playoff is going to be impacted the most by any one particular signing? So which signing has Super Bowl level impact? That's what Stephen A. and Max debated today on First Take.
Emmanuel Sanders going to the Saints. We're talking about Super Bowl. The Saints the last several years have been a lot of people's preseason picks as NFC champs, if not Super Bowl champs, because when all was said and done, you looked at the team and you thought top to bottom, they're the best. Plus, they have a quarterback you trust in big moments, although Drew Brees actually has come up small in some big moments recently. Let's be honest. I suppose, with given his resume, he's come up big enough times that that sort of thing could happen to anyone. But really, what have the Saints missed in recent years? It's a legit number two receiver with Michael Thomas. And I've gone back and forth on Sanders in recent years. Is he a jag, just the guy, or is he more than that? I think he's more than that. He went, in other words, like, obviously he's very good, he's versatile, but at what level can he do all the different things he does? I think on a very high level. The guy's just excellent. He puts up the numbers no matter what you ask him to do. And more than that, guys, wherever he goes, they win the Super Bowl, or at least get there. He's been to the Super Bowl with three different teams, and I don't think it's coincidental, because when that guy's your number two receiver, you got a hell of a receiving core, at least a hell of a number one guy. They got an all-purpose back out of the backfield, or at least a very versatile back, a guy who can catch passes and do things out of the backfield, obviously in Kamara. They have Thomas and now Emmanuel Sanders. I've brought up the fact that Taysom Hill is not just a gadget player like people think. They're grooming him to be the next quarterback. But he can play. He's really fast, can play, obviously, an effective running back. He can catch passes. He can be a fullback, for crying out loud. What Emmanuel Sanders does is ratchet up an already Super Bowl caliber offense to a very well-rounded team with a great coach, a great quarterback, and a good enough defense, especially against the run, where when we're talking about the teams that made a move that could tip the scales in their favor, I think it's the Saints. I think, once again, the Saints, at least pre-draft, are going to be, at this moment, many people's pick to get to the Super Bowl, at least. And I think Emmanuel Sanders is the guy that puts them over the top.
I got news for you, Max. I don't dislike what you're saying. I guess for me, I think the very thing that you're pointing to is what could dilute your argument, because the New Orleans Saints have been allergic to prosperity over the last couple of years. They've been the favorite the last couple of years, and it's because they've been the favorites that some would argue that they've ultimately succumbed to it. Now, obviously, no pass interference call against the Rams, Nicole Roby, Coleman, a couple of years ago. Last year, they went into the playoffs and then got smacked around by Minnesota. We get all of that. But the other side to this is that, for me personally, I'm going to say Tom Brady and the Bucs. And here's why. The Bucs did finish 7-9. I got news for you. We're talking about three victories. You're a playoff team. That's 10 wins. They lost in overtime to Seattle. They lost by 7 to New Orleans. They split with the other two teams in their division in Carolina and Atlanta. So when I look at, actually, I think they beat Atlanta twice. So I'm looking at Tom Brady being there, and you basically could sit up there and say he's never thrown more than 14 interceptions in a season in his entire career. Jameis Winston obviously threw 30. So you're talking about limiting your interceptions by at least 16. Okay, you're talking about a defense that was ranked 8th in efficiency, and you're talking about whether or not Tom Brady, with Mike Evans, with Chris Godwin, with Cameron Brate, with O.J. Howard and these boys, can Tom Brady's presence make a 3-4 game difference? I would say yes. And if that's the case, you're talking about them potentially challenging, if not winning, the NFC South, which would negate everything everybody's saying about New Orleans. New Orleans clearly is formidable, and picking up Emmanuel Sanders to pair him with Michael Thomas is definitely something that cannot be ignored. I totally appreciate that. But if Jameis Winston was that much of a liability because of his turnovers, and we recognize that it's Tom Brady there now instead of him, so at the very least, turnovers are not going to be as problematic for you as a franchise. Now you've got something. And I'd say in my estimation, because of that, Tom Brady would be a more important move than Emmanuel Sanders in New Orleans, because Drew Brees is probably still going to target Michael Thomas every chance he gets.
That's Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less. Only at Walmart. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We'll get some of your Straight Talk. The NCAA is voting on whether players should get another year of eligibility for spring sports. Specifically, let me stress, basketball is not a spring sport. It's a winter sport. So we're talking about spring sport athletes getting an extra year of eligibility. You guys can hop in here on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Let's get some of your take on it. Gavin from Iowa. Gavin, what do you got? What's your take?
I think that they should get another year. You know, it's not fair. I mean, for the players who really had a good chance to make something out of their career, like, I know he's not, I don't know if he's a senior or not. He might be a junior. I know he's going in the draft, but Trey Jones, he still could have won a title this year with Duke, but he can't do that anymore. And I'm kind of biased with this, but Luka Garza, Iowa, he's a senior. I think he should get another year. I think Iowa could have gone very far in the playoffs. So in my opinion, I think they should have got another year. And then they didn't play the full season, and you know, without the tournament and March Madness, it's just kind of crazy. So,
Gavin, thanks for your take. I appreciate it, buddy. The only thing that's hard here is that because basketball is a winter sport, that one's really off the table. So we have to see spring sports get this vote through first. And we talked to Dan Wolken earlier last hour about whether or not then it will trickle back to winter sports. We don't really have an indication yet on that. And what will it mean for football moving forward, too? Is a precedent going to be set? So that's an interesting line to have to go through. Michael in Texas, what's your take? If you were voting, how would you handle it?
Well, I'm definitely a former coach of high school athletes, and definitely see those guys getting recruited, and they've just lost their whole spring season as well. And so they're going to have to be moving on to their college-level sport. We also need to think about our JUCO players. As being an athlete in college, coming from a JUCO season, I think those guys need to be considered in this discussion as well.
I don't disagree with that at all, Michael. And look, that's a really interesting and valid point we haven't talked a lot about. High school athletes were incredibly impacted by this because think of so many high school athletes, especially I'll go back to for spring sports. Like if you are a swimmer, for example, and you needed your state meet as your opportunity to sort of come through and show your shine, there is no easy solution for some of these sports and high school athletes that are impacted by it as well. Brandon in Iowa, what is your take? If you were voting, how would you handle it?
I would vote to, give him the extra year just for maturity level. You know, if you got a, you got a pitcher that's working, worked all off season on a curveball or something, he needs to see that live, that live hitting, and I don't want, the like baseball, softball, volleyball to have to experience, the hurt like Utah State or Dayton or BYU or even like Spencer Lee, winning the Hodge Trophy and not being able to be a four-time, national champion. But it just comes down to money. It does the NCAA care about more about the money, or do they care about, the students?
But well, and that's a great point, and you're right, and thanks for your take. It does so often come down to money. I will say this, though. It's not just a matter of hoarding money. I think one thing that Dan pointed out smartly when we talked to USA Today columnist Dan Wolken last hour, one thing he pointed out smartly is that there are schools that simply can't foot this bill if they have to bring in a bunch of extra people. So for many of the major schools, yes, it's not a big deal. For some of the smaller schools, it is a huge deal. Donald in Nashville. Donald, what's your take?
Hey, thanks for taking my call here, man.
Yeah, man.
I play D1 myself. I know it sounds so cruel, but it's no way they can give people another year to play under these circumstances, because the only thing you're going to do is have a big log jam. The only thing I'll be concerned about is NCAA coming through. Mm-hmm. If they want to say education is important, well, this is going to be the time to show it, to make sure those people get an opportunity to graduate on scholarship. Go back to school. Make sure they finish out their year with a scholarship for sure.
Now, Donald, that's a great point, too. The NCAA needs to make sure that these athletes have the opportunity to go in and finish what they started with their education. I 1,000% agree with that. And you're right. The logjam issue of it is difficult. I'm not sure because, as many people have pointed out on Twitter, you can tweet me at Jason Fitz, where does it stop? Because we wouldn't just be giving extra year of eligibility, from my understanding, to simply seniors. It would be everybody that's impacted from this. But what does that mean for incoming freshmen that are about to come into their college career? So, again, I think that you have to sort of allow an exception to your scholarship limits in a way where if somebody chooses to take the offer to come back, they don't count against the scholarship cap. That way, when they leave, whenever that is, there wasn't a strange number of scholarships. They just fall off the books. That seems like a simple solution, but that certainly isn't simple for players that are trying to come in. I want you to hear what Jay Billis had to say about it. Jay's one of the best minds we have around college sports in general. He joined First Take to discuss the upcoming vote by the NCAA. You'll hear from Jay Billis, and we'll take more of your take on how the NCAA should handle this next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. The NCAA is going to vote today on whether spring sport athletes should get an extra year of eligibility, not just seniors, but all of the athletes that are affected that are spring sport athletes. Let me stress, basketball is not a spring sport, so this doesn't affect March Madness, but spring sport athletes, things like baseball, will be affected by this vote today. The question we're asking you is, how would you vote? It's First Take, your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. You can hang out with us. Tell us how you would vote. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's the way you get in on the conversation. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. How would you vote if you got a chance to have your voice heard with the NCAA on whether or not players should get an extra year of eligibility as a result of the coronavirus pandemic? By the way, if you missed the first hour of today's show, go check it out on demand. And we also have the second hour there. First Take, Your Take podcast brought to you by the Capital One Quicksilver Card, earning unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase everywhere. What's in your wallet? Some great stuff from Dan Wolken, who joined us earlier. Now, Jay Billis with ESPN is one of our best voices around all things NCAA. He joined First Take today with Max and Stephen A. to give his thoughts on what the NCAA could and should do today.
considering the dire circumstances that we're faced with. Obviously, nothing anybody could have predicted in the way the sports world has been ravaged because of all of this. Just across the board, across the platform, how could you sit up there and say, I'm still going to hold the student athlete accountable? The eligibility that you had has evaporated. You're no longer eligible. A matter of fact, if you recall a couple of weeks ago when all of this went down and, you know, I brought up the University of Dayton, for example, I mean, how could you predict the kind of year that they ended up having? I said, you know something? Let them come back next year, same squad, and try to do it again. That's the best thing that you could do for them. I have no problem with it whatsoever. I think the eligibility of the student athletes should absolutely positively be extended, and I don't think I don't even think there's a debate on it personally.
Yeah, I want to hear what Jay Billis, I want to see the way Jay Billis talks about this and hear that. So all I can say is I can't believe this is a question. Naturally, we're hitting the pause button on a lot of stuff, and this is in no way unfair to anyone and seems quite the opposite. It seems to be the fair and right thing to do. I can't really imagine, Jay, what the objection is, but I'd love to hear your take on it.
Yeah, Max and Stephen, I don't think there's an objection to the principle of allowing players to come back for another year of eligibility. I think everybody thinks it's the right thing to do. I think the question comes with how it's executed. One, there's going to have to be an easing of scholarship limits and roster limits. That's not too difficult. The other part of it that you're hearing from athletic directors is the cost of this, because it's basically an accounting issue. All of these costs are going to be booked in the athletic department. So additional scholarships, additional costs will be booked on the athletic department. But the university actually is the beneficiary of it. So it's probably a net gain overall for a university, because every scholarship dollar that's paid out of the athletic department goes to the university. So it's like the four of us moving money from our right pocket into our left pocket, then claiming that our right pocket is somehow bankrupt, but it's all in our left pocket. And most of these athletes in spring sports pay their own way, essentially, that there are such scholarship limits that are so restrictive that I think at baseball they've got like 11 scholarships for a 40-man roster, things like that. So that means a lot of these baseball players are paying their own way. So if they give another year of eligibility, it's just a question of finding them a seat in class. It's not a big deal as far as cost is concerned.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. There isn't necessarily an easy solution, but there should be some solution. We'll get a sense on the vote today. Nate in Tennessee, thanks for calling the show. What's your take, Nate? If you were with the NCAA, how would you vote?
Man, I it's tough because I think for me, you want to give the kids an extra year of eligibility. I coached at the college level for, you know, softball, and I can tell you, man, it's just not a simple solution, but I think there is a four-year plan you could do. This class somehow.
Well,
like
thanks for. What's go ahead, Nate. Go ahead. Sorry. I lost you for a second. Go ahead.
No, you're good. I was just saying with the extra, create an extra year, maybe like a fifth year, something like that. But also on top of that, you'd have to adjust your eligibility scale because of how the credit hours are set for the NCAA. It doesn't really work like, hey, it's 12 hours bare minimum. You might want to drop that back down to 9. So some of these kids are able to kind of go to class for a little bit there. And you'd have to do that for about 4 years so you could have like a readjustment period. I mean, it's not simply cut as dry as, hey, yeah, let's vote yes on giving these kids an extra year of eligibility. That doesn't work for some of these places that don't have grad school or stuff like that. You have to adjust not just the eligibility side of things, but you also have to adjust the class schedules, the bare minimum requirements,
We're up against it, Nate, so I got to cut you off. I'm sorry, but you know, I you're absolutely right. It's not easy. I'll continue to say that the NCAA has some great minds in it. So what I'm asking the NCAA to do is acknowledge that it's not easy, but find some level of solution. And I've had a lot of people tweet me and say, hey, life isn't fair. You're right. It isn't fair. But do we need to speed up that message to college athletes right now? If we can find a way to help them, I think we should. Will Cain Show coming up next. God knows he's going to have an opinion on Wentz and Dak. Keep hanging out with us. Be safe, everybody.